following is a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com.
Today, I did something that I thought was pretty fun. I walked around to our office staff, and I thought it'd be fun to go around and ask this question. I said, what were you irrationally afraid of as a child? And so I compiled a list here from Pastor Allen. And I have permission to share all these things, by the way. And from Pastor Allen, he said it was grasshoppers. Pastor Jeff, and he said for his was the indoor pool in downtown Huntington Beach. And he has no idea why, but he was irrationally afraid of that indoor pool in Huntington Beach. For Vanjie, she said she was afraid of the dark. She felt like as a child when she was in her bed, she could not move if it was dark because she said something would probably get her if she moved. Isaac Rosa, who also was afraid of the dark. Becky Richards was afraid of Freddy Krueger. Rex, our sound guy back there, afraid of the dark. Kathy, who also works at our front desk, was afraid of butterflies. And Kim, afraid of heights. And I just thought it was really fun to compile this together. And so I just wanted to share that with you guys. You can have fun with that. But it has to do with my message tonight, believe it or not, because I'm going to share with you an irrational fear that I had. Super rational. It terrified me. My irrational fear when I was about 11 or 12 was that the world was going to end and I would go down with that world. Because what was happening when I was 11 or 12, so it was the late 90s, and what was happening in church culture in the late 90s was there was this book that was taking church bookstores by storm. It's called Left Behind. And my dad loved it, and I was like, oh, well, if my dad loves this, I'm going to read it too, because I want to be like my dad. And I remember reading this as an 11 or 12-year-old boy, and I couldn't even finish it. I started it, I probably got four or five chapters in, and I was absolutely terrified by what I was reading. Like, it just scared me so much. I remember, like, here's my rational fear, was that not only would I be left behind, but the rapture would happen, and God would be like, yeah, Chris, every Christian is going up, but you, like, you're staying here. Like, I'm taking your friends, I'm taking your family, and you can hang out here with every unsaved person. And so this is my irrational fear, and I would get so freaked out by this. I kid you not, I would stay up late worried about this, like thinking about ways to acquire goods, you know, if my parents are gone, like, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to handle this type of thing? And so for my birthday rolls around, and my aunt sends me $40 for my birthday in this birthday card. And I was pretty excited about this. You know, as $40 to me was, this would be a way that if my irrational fear comes true, I will survive. Like, I will have this $40 that I could trade for other goods, and I can barter, and I can get furs and guns and anything that I might need to survive, you know, this raptured off world. This is my irrational fear. Which is interesting, though, because for an 11 or 12-year-old, when you get $40, what's the first thing you do with that $40? You spend it, right? But for me, I was like, I need to hang on to this. Like, this is going to be my life. I need to have this $40. So I took this $40, and I put it in this Vans shoebox that I had, and it was in my closet. And in the shoebox were some other things that were precious to me, like some pictures of my family, because I was convinced this was going to happen, like some pictures of my family, a letter that I got from my dad, some drawings that my siblings had made and gave to me. And I'm like, these are the things I'm going to treasure forever when I'm here by myself, and the $40. And so, like, I remember being in my bed at night and laying there, and I kind of see that box, like, through, like, the light in the closet a little bit. I'd be like, that's it. You know, that's my go box. You know, when everything goes bad, that's what I'm grabbing. You know, when that 747 drops out of the sky because the pilot was a Christian, like, that's what I'm going to grab, and everything else is on fire, but I'm grabbing that box, and I'm going to be okay. I kid you not, there are many, like, nights where I had, like, these thoughts running through my mind. And I was ready because I had that $40. And for some reason, I had this idea that $40 would get me far, but obviously it wouldn't. But I kept that for about a year. And that's pretty good, I think, for an 11 or 12-year-old boy to keep $40 for about a year. I didn't touch it. I would look at it. I would think about it, but I would never take it out of the box. It would stay there. I was convinced that this $40 that I had was to be treasured. and I should keep a close eye on it and not spend it on anything just in case my irrational fear came true. Now, thankfully, my fear never came true. I am here. I am now almost 30, and I am telling you my ridiculous irrational fears as a little boy. But let's think about that $40 for just a second. That $40. My reason for hanging on to it is kind of silly. It was irrational. But the question that I want to pose to you is, do you think I took good care of that? If God were to entrust me with that $40 and him tell me, I want you to be faithful with this money because I want you to think about your future, do you think I really took care of that? Some people would be like, no, Chris, because of the parable of the talents. You didn't take care of that. Well, if that's in the boat that you're in tonight, I'm going to blow your mind with another parable. And I'm going to tell you and make the argument that, yes, I do think that I took good care of that $40. I think I could look God in the eye, and if he said, Chris, I want you to take care of this $40 because I want you to think about your future, I could make the argument and say, God, I'm really convinced that this is going to happen. I know that it's unbiblical, and I'm sorry, but I was really concerned for my future. I was entrusted with the $40, and I kind of feel like I took good care about that, or good care with that. In case you haven't caught this tonight, what I want to talk to you about is being faithful with the things that God has given us. That $40 that you've been entrusted with, the things that God has let you be in control of and manage, is the question we want to pose ourselves. Are we being faithful with those things? Now, tonight, I want to give you something. I want to give you something that's probably the best thing anyone's giving you today. I want to give you a cool title. You know, some of us have like titles at work where we're like manager or whatever, or just employee or whatever that looks like. I want to give you a cool title tonight. I'm going to give you the title agent. Like, how awesome would that be if your business card said agent? It's like Chris Duarte, agent. People are like, agent of what? Like, that's amazing. They get excited about that. And you would get excited about it too if that was your title. And I'm going to give you that tonight. Is imagining your business card says your name, and underneath it, your title is agent. I mean, that would be awesome. And so tonight, that's your title, because really, an agent means a person who acts on behalf of another. They are the go-between. They are the representative. And tonight, I want you to see that each one of us is an agent. And each one of us is an agent of a lot of things already in our lives. We're agents of our families. We're agents of our workplace because we're representatives of there. We're agents of our bank accounts. And here's the thing. Here's what I want to talk about tonight, is that we are also agents of what belongs to God. We are an agent of that account. And when you think about that, that is really intense to know that you have been entrusted as an agent to the account of God. What belongs to him, he has said, I entrust you with these things. And when we start to really think about that, it could be super intimidating and super scary. And you start to wonder, well, how am I supposed to be a good agent with that? How do I handle that? What do I do? Do I sit back and do nothing because that's terrifying? How do I act as an agent of God's account? And that's what I want to talk about tonight. And I want to talk to you about this tonight because I feel like it's eye-opening. For me, it's been super eye-opening the past few months. I also need to warn you that it's convicting too. I've been certainly convicted of not being a good agent of the account of God. And I'm going to give you that warning. But really, what I want to talk to you about most of all is to get to see that this opportunity gives us the opportunity, it gives us the view to see how good God really is. That he loves us so much that he allows us to be agents of what is his. So we are agents of his account, and that's what I want to talk about tonight. We're going to be in the book of Luke, chapter 16, starting in verse 1 tonight. If you want to turn there with me, that would be fantastic. Luke chapter 16, verse 1. And this is Jesus with his disciples, and it says in the beginning here, he says, he also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called to him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. Verse 8. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, but that when you may fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. Verse 10, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful, also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you or trust the true riches? And let's stop there for right now, and we'll continue on later on. But what we start to see here in the beginning here is we see that there was a rich man and a steward. And so the rich man, another translation uses the word manager. And so you have this rich man and a manager. And this was basically this manager, this steward. He was like a financial planner like we have today. If you have a sum of money and you want to invest the sum of money, you hope for a return on your money. And you hope that you have these resources and you want to make more resources with those resources. So you hire someone to take care of that for you. That's what the steward was. His purpose was to take this rich man's resources and multiply them, just like we have today. And this was common back in Jesus' day, just as it is common today, for this guy to manage these funds. If one was wealthy enough, they would hire someone to manage the funds for them. And so that's what the steward is. But Jesus brings up this certain steward because he's being accused of something. He's being accused of wasting the rich man's possessions, the things that he owned. He was being accused of not being a good manager. It says there was an accusation brought to him that this man was wasting the goods. And so because this accusation was brought to him, the boss calls him into the office. And it says in verse 2, so he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Basically, tell me what's going on here. He says, give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward. He says, I understand what's been going on. I see what you've been doing. I've heard these things. The numbers don't add up. You're wasting my stuff here. So he's basically telling him, you're not being a good agent of this account. And we know here that he's basically going to be fired. And so because we know that because then it says, because he says he can no longer be steward. You can no longer have your job. You can no longer be an agent here. And then in verse 3, it says, then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? So this man is met with this question. He's losing his job, and he's wondering, well, what is it that I can do now? He says, I can't dig. I can't do manual labor. He says, that's not for me. And he says, I'm way too ashamed to beg. So he asks himself this really question that I think we all ask ourselves, well, how am I supposed to manage it then? What am I supposed to do? What is best for me is what he was asking himself. How do I make the best of the situation for me? So knowing that he's going to lose his job, knowing that he's probably going to lose some friends in the process, he comes up with his idea in verse 4. He does something very interesting that, again, looks out for just himself. He says, I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, when I lose my job, they may receive me into their houses. Him realizing that he's probably not going to have a place to live anymore. And so he comes up with this clever idea in a way to ensure that he's going to have resources to be able to live after he loses his job. And so he makes this decision on his own, looking out for himself when he was entrusted with someone else's stuff. Let me tell you a little bit about me. When I was engaged, I wanted to buy a new car. And my wife and I, who was then my fiance, we were saving money in this bank account. We were trying to contribute as much as we can to save up for our wedding, our honeymoon, or anything else we might need. But I historically have had a car problem. I've been driving for like 13 or 14 years, and I've owned like 13 or 14 cars. So that kind of tells you the issues that I have. And so back when I didn't have this problem under control, we were engaged, and I wanted to buy a new car. My wife knew this. She was on board with the idea, but she wanted to be part of the process. I mean, it made sense. And so there was this one night, I said, hey, look, my dad told me I can go talk to the guy at Toyota, and because my dad used to work there, and I said, I want to go down there. She's like, okay, you know, like, let me know what you see, and we'll talk about it later on. I'm like, all right, cool. So I go with my younger brother, which was a terrible idea. And I go, and this black 2012 brand new Toyota Tacoma, all the bells and whistles, basically the thing that I wanted for a few years was there. And the guy's like, I can get it to you for this price. It's like an employee price. I'm like, wow, like this is the deal of a lifetime. And so I'm calling my wife, and she's in class. I'm like, come on, please answer your phone. Please answer your phone. She's not answering. And the guy's like, we got to make this deal today because this is the last 2012 on the lot. We're blowing these things out. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I need to do this. And I'm like, I'm just going to do it. And so I pull out $5,000 out of our bank account, and I put that as a down payment to receive then a six-year loan that was $440 a month, and all without my then-fiancé knowing what was going on. And I drive over to her house later and I'm like, check this out. You know, I'm showing her roommates. I'm like, get in, let's go for a ride. And she's pretending to be happy, but I can tell like it wasn't good. It wasn't okay. And her roommates are like, oh, this is awesome. I'm like, yeah, it is, right? And then they went inside and oh my gosh, it was so bad. It was so bad. She was like, I'm supposed to marry you and you're over here spending $5,000 of our money and getting us in this 6-year contract. She's like, you're only looking out for yourself. She was, yeah, the truck is no longer my life, but she was right. She was totally right. You know, I had been entrusted with money that wasn't all mine. Part of that was hers. You know, and that future, that 6 years, part of that was hers. But instead, I went out and said, you know, this is what I want. This is what's going to benefit me, and this is what I did. And so here's this steward who does the same exact thing. He has access to some resources that aren't his. But wanting what the self wants, he goes and he comes up with this idea to go ahead and to kind of secure his future. And in verse 5, and we see what his idea was. He says, so he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. So this guy owes the master 100 measures of oil. And so the steward says, so he said to him, just take your bill, sit down, and quickly, and just write 50. We'll just call it at 50, no problem. Well, why is he doing this? Because he's looking out for himself, because he realizes if he cuts this guy a deal, when he doesn't have a job anymore, this guy will be like, oh yeah, you hooked me up, you cut that bill in half, like come stay in my house. So this steward is onto this scheme of his. And he goes on to another in verse 7, and it says, and how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said, and take your bill and just write 80. We'll just take 20 off of that. And so we know that the guy, the steward, the manager, ends up going back to the owner with the stuff, probably with a smirk on his face, being like, yeah, I outsmarted you. I don't need your resources anymore. And he gives him what he collected, which obviously didn't measure up, which obviously wasn't enough. But what we see here is very interesting. In verse 8. From the master, the rich man. It says, the master actually commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. The manager was proud of what the steward had done. He was impressed with what the steward had done because he had acted shrewdly. And shrewdly means, according to dictionary terms, it means someone having good judgment or they are very smart, clever, or conniving. And we see that's what the steward had done. But the master was impressed with his conniving ways, which tells us that the master and the steward are both corrupt people, and which tells us that one of them still could not manage the master's resources the way that he was entrusted to. Here's the thing. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 1 says, this is how each one should regard us as servants and stewards of the mysteries of God. You see, each one of us is the manager. Each one of us is a steward of the master's things. But we don't want to go back to the master with not measuring up, with not properly handling the things that we had been entrusted with. That's not how we want to go back. And each one of us has the same master, the same boss, the same one who owns all the same stuff, and his name is God. But most of us go about our daily lives never thinking about this because we live in a culture that says, you earned that money. You made it happen. Your personality got you that promotion. You deserve this. You earned that. That is yours. That is a culture that we live in. And the culture says it belongs to you. But that is completely opposite what the Bible tells us. In fact, the Bible tells us multiple times throughout Scripture, and I'm just going to give you a couple times, where it refers to everything as being God's. Psalm 24, verse 1, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it belongs to him. James 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. You see, all of these things belong to God, and each one of us is a manager. Each one of us is a steward of small pieces of God's wealth. But we don't always think about it that way, and most of us, and myself included, are like the manager in this parable, to where we don't manage the resources the way that we've been entrusted with. We've been given access to riches, right? but we manage them poorly. And we go back to the master and we're like, this is all that I got. This is all that I have to show. And that's not okay. Because most of us make decisions and we manage it and we handle these things because we're looking out for ourselves. What's going to be in my best interest? Can I buy that truck? It's in my best interest. Can I make sure that my future is secure by hooking somebody up and cutting the price of something for my best interest? A lot of times we're just like the steward in the parable. And it's sad, but true. And there are, all of us have been entrusted with all kinds of different things. Whether you realize it or not, you might have a house, you might not. You might have a car, you might not. But does that mean that you're entrusted with less things? I don't think so. Because at the end of the day, each one of us is entrusted with this one thing. We can all agree upon this one thing that we've been entrusted with. It starts with a T, ends in an I'm. Some of you put it together. Time. We've all been entrusted with time, mass amounts of time. Yet how much of the boss's time do we waste? How much of the boss's resources do we waste? We've been entrusted with that. But what do we have to show for it at the end of the day? Are we being faithful with that time that God has given us? Are we being faithful with the money that God has given us? Are we being faithful with the jobs, the family, the friends? And then if we were to ask ourselves that question, am I being a good steward of what I've been given? And if we're absolutely honest with ourselves, we start to look at everything that we've been given, a lot of us would have to say, no, I'm terrible with my time. I waste my money. I hate my job. I'm over my family. I could use a new batch of friends. We come up with all of these things after we've asked ourselves, am I being a good steward of the things I've been given? And we start to realize that as much as we would like to say yes, if we're going to be honest, our answer has to be no. And we see we're more and more like the unjust steward, like the one who wasted the owner's resources. And here's the interesting thing about this, is that we expect to be entrusted with all the stuff, and then you know what we want? We want to be entrusted with more. We say, God, I've already wasted so much time, but give me more time to waste. I've wasted so much money, but give me more money to waste. I've wasted the friends that I have, but give me some more friends to just cast aside. That's how we are. And it's sad that that's what we do, and we expect God to give us more when we're already poor stewards of what we've been entrusted with. So after Jesus explaining to everybody around him and the disciples that the master commended the unjust steward, he said, this is not the way it should be. There's no reason why this man should be commended. And in fact, he says in verse 10, he says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Like I said, a lot of us want more when we can't even take care of what little we've been given. We want to manage even more, even though we can't even take care of the stuff we've already been given to manage. And Jesus talks about this in verse 10. Another translation puts it, whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will be dishonest with much. You want to manage more? You want to be entrusted with more? Then according to Jesus, you got to be faithful with what you currently have. Which means that the time that you currently have, the job that you currently have, the family you currently have, and the friends that you currently have. Otherwise, Jesus is saying, you know, it's really a heart issue that you have. If you're dishonest and unfaithful to the things that you'd be given now, if he were to give you more, you're going to be dishonest and unfaithful with those things too. Because he sees your heart, and he's going to get to that. And here's the thing, I wanted to share this with you because this has been on my heart and on my mind now for a couple months. Because a couple months ago, I was hit with this reality. I was outside on my patio there, and I was praying. And to be honest with you, I was crying. And I was wondering about some stuff in my life not going my way. And I'm wondering why God's not blessing certain things. And I'm wondering why this has happened. And so clearly, I hear the Lord speak to me, why would I continue to give you more when you can't even handle what I've given you? That hurt. Like, it was convicting. I started looking at my life, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, the Lord is right. What am I out here crying for and complaining when I deserve this. Like, I haven't even been a good and faithful steward with the little things that he's given me already. And it's not that we serve a God that doesn't want to give. That's not it at all. As a matter of fact, Jesus addresses this in verse 11. He says, therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, which is another word for money and riches, who will commit to your trust the true riches? You see, he poses this question to them because what he's saying here is there is a God that wants to give you true riches. But if you're unfaithful and unjust, if you're just like the steward, who's going to trust you with his true riches? We serve a God that wants to give and give and give. It's not that he doesn't want to give. He does. So he poses this question. He wants to know, do you want to be entrusted? Do you want to manage the true riches? Do you really want to manage real wealth? Not this worldly wealth, but real wealth. In verse 12, he says, and if you've not been faithful, and what is another man's? Who will give you what is your own? You see, he challenges them. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who is going to trust you with true riches? And it's convicting because you start to think about all the worldly riches that you and I have a hard time already managing. The Lord is giving you those. But what we really want to manage and what we really need to strive for and want are these true riches. And I'm going to get to what that means in just a little bit here. But Jesus goes on, and this is so important to catch in verse 13. He says, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. He says the two masters are mutually exclusive. You can have two, but you certainly cannot serve two. You can have two cars, but last I checked, you can't drive two cars at the same time. That's what he's saying. You can have two masters, but you cannot certainly serve two masters. It's mutually exclusive. It's impossible. And Jesus wisely points out that you will be loyal to one and you will end up despising the other. You'll take care of one, but you will neglect the other. You cannot be an agent of your own stuff and your own account and your own agenda and expect also to be a faithful agent of God's account. You have to choose one. And hopefully you're on board with choosing the latter of those two. And we'll see why here in just a second. But Jesus wisely pointed out, you're going to love one and be loyal to one, but you will despise and be dishonest to the other. If you and I are loyal and we love our own account and our own agenda, naturally we're going to start to despise and be dishonest with the Lord's account and the Lord's agenda. Jesus said there's no way. It's impossible to serve two masters. And so we know the Pharisees are around when this happens because in verse 14, it says, now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. You see, he brings up the Pharisees, and we know that about the Pharisees, it tells us right here that they love money. And what we also know about the Pharisees is that they cared a lot about the outward appearance, how they appeared to others. Did they appear to be holy enough, to know enough, to be good enough? They cared a lot about the outward appearance, but Jesus calls them out on this. And I think this is so important that we have to catch here, and we have to closely look at this, because there's a lot of us, myself included, who can act as a good agent of the account of God, but it can be an outward appearance. And my heart and your heart and our hearts aren't in it. But the rest of us, we're like, wow, look at what they're doing. They must really be all about the Lord's stuff. Some of us are great actors. Some of us are like the Pharisees. But Jesus calls them out on it. He says, you are those who justify yourselves before men. He says, but God knows your hearts. Why are we acting about it? What does it matter? God knows our hearts. Either we're in or we're not. Either we're about managing our own accounts or about managing his account. It doesn't matter what it looks like. It matters what it is. It matters what the heart says, what our hearts feel. And so I think it's very important for us to take a close look at this, because it's not about the appearance. It's about really what's before the Lord. He knows our hearts. And if we're talking about our hearts, here's what our hearts should desire, are the true riches. And this is what I said that I would get to here. Our hearts should desire, they should strive for, they should want to best manage the account of God, because that's where the true riches are. Now, what are the true riches? Well, they're referring to eternal things. So then the question is, how do we handle the account of God? What does that mean? What are the eternal riches? Here's what I think one of the biggest things that is in the eternal riches account of God. It's His love. That is an eternal thing. Those are true riches. Those are things that you and I can't walk into any store and buy today. Those are things that you and I cannot earn today. Those are things that you and I can't just beg for enough today. We're not going to get that from anybody else. God's love is unparalleled. It is unmatched. And it is a true rich that He has in His account. How do we handle the account of His love? How do we do that? What are we supposed to do? What does that look like? How do we view it? Ask yourself that question. How do I view the account of God's love? Because when we ask ourselves that question, we should be impacted by it. We should be impacted when we look at this and we say, wow, God's love for me is so vast that I cannot fathom it, that I cannot comprehend it, that I cannot understand it. When you start to look at the account that you manage, it should blow your minds. It should cause you to take a step back and like, wow, I cannot believe that I serve a God who trusts me with His love, who trusts me with true riches, who trusts me to tell others about eternity. He trusts me with those things. We must ask ourselves that question. How do I view it? Am I impacted by it? Do we think about it daily? Because if we do, I 100% believe that we will be blown away at the amount of love that is in that account. If we view it as treasure, if we view it as people who are unworthy to handle it, then it should be affecting our lives in amazing and positive ways that the world cannot understand. And if that is not happening, then we're probably not looking at it properly. And we're probably managing it a lot like the steward did. That account, as an agent of God's love, an account of God's love, should overflow into other people. We should have no choice, no room to talk ourselves out of it, but to tell others about the account that we get the privilege to manage. If we really think about it, we will have no choice but to tell others about it. They will see it. They will hear it. They will know it by your actions and by the words and by that smile on your face. They will know that you have access to a resource that they don't. And believe me and trust me, the entire world is looking how to manage these true resources because they are deprived of them. You and I are not deprived of those true resources. Realize that we have been blessed with access to them. And because we have been blessed with access to them, we need to be a good agent of this account, the one that matters. I want to be faithful with little, so I can be entrusted with much. And it's not that I want the title to have much. I just want access to more of His love. I want that to be just pouring out of me, and people see that and people know that. And I just want to know that I have been a good steward of what is His. The things that belong to Him. They're not mine. I don't want to be a good steward of my own account. It's worthless. I want to be a good steward of His account. We have been chosen to be agents of the account that matters, to be a faithful manager of this account. When we get to manage this account of this true wealth, the true riches, and it's for kingdom purposes, realize that, that is for kingdom purposes. It's not for your purposes or my purposes, but that wealth is for kingdom purposes. And when we realize that it's for kingdom purposes, we have to ask ourselves, what are we doing for the kingdom? Are we being good agents of the account of God? If not, let's change it. Let's be good stewards. Let's not be ones who look out for our own good or our own self or our own agenda or our own account. But let's look out for God's account, because he's about things that are eternal. You and I are only about things that are temporary. He's got a better agenda than we do. Let's be good stewards of his account. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for your word tonight. Father, I pray that you help each one of us, Lord, to be good stewards, to be faithful with the small things that you've given us. Father, we want true riches. Lord, we want to spread those true riches to people who don't know you, people who don't know what your love is like. Lord, we live in a world where people are craving and they are looking for answers. They are craving love and acceptance and peace. Father, and you offer all of those things. So Lord, I pray that you help us to be faithful so that way we can have access to true riches. Thank you so much, Lord, that you have entrusted us with your riches, with your account. You have allowed us to be agents. And thank you so much for that, God. We certainly do not deserve it, Lord, but we thank you and we give you praise. Amen.
This has been a presentation of Refuge Calvary Chapel Huntington Beach. For more information about our ministry, please visit refugefamily.com or call 714-891-9495.